Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey, good afternoon or morning, night, wherever you are in the world, welcome. We have got Sarah McCarthy with us today. And many of you are familiar with part one we did with Juliet Bryant. We just did a part two with Juliet Bryant and her mum, which will be coming out soon. But Sarah, and she's going to tell you all about this, has just completed, and it's about to be published, Juliet's story. And there's a hell of a lot of detail in there, folks, going from, you know, how Jeffrey used his evil techniques to get these women human transportation, but also the diabolical schemes of what happened in New Mexico, the eugenics, baby farms, cloning, you know, the governor of New Mexico, Bill Richardson. I think Juliet referred to the three bills, Bill Clinton. And then we've got Kevin Spacey's in this story as well, when they're going around on the plane with Clinton through Africa. So, Sarah, a huge thank you for coming on, firstly, and congratulations on the book. And we have put the link in the description box so that people can pre-order it.
We've got thank you for having me on.
Yeah, I mean, what got you into this genre in the first place?
Well, I'm a long-term friend of Juliet Bryant, and she actually endured her abuse in silence for many years, almost 2 decades, until Epstein was finally arrested in 2019. only then she told me about her story. And because her story is so unique compared to other survivors, I knew that this had to come out. It's a completely different story. It turns the whole Epstein sex trafficking on its head, basically. I think you know Juliet's story, but for your viewers who don't, her story is unique in that she was trafficked to New Mexico in 2004 on her final trip with Epstein. And on that trip, she woke up naked in a laboratory with a female doctor operating on her without her knowledge and without her consent. So Blue Butterfly explores the very real possibility that Epstein was trafficking these girls for medical crimes, not for sex trafficking.
All right, just for the purpose of YouTube, we're going to say transporting them. Otherwise, if we say that other word too many times, sure, then YouTube suppresses the video. So you said that, you know, there were certain elements of Juliet's story that made it stand out from other survivors.
Yes.
You've touched on it a bit there. What other elements were there?
Well, she also believes that the abuse that she suffered at the hands of Jeffrey Epstein, the sexual abuse, was not as severe to cause the awful circumstances she had when she returned from Zorro Ranch. When she got back to Cape Town in July 2004, her mental state collapsed. She had severe panic attacks. She was hospitalized up to 10 times. The doctors didn't know what was wrong with her. She was put on tranquilizers. They thought, because she couldn't breathe, they thought that she may have something like asthma. They gave her asthma pumps. That made it worse. She said her state was so bad she couldn't leave the house for a year. And that all happened after her trip to New Mexico. She says herself that the sexual abuse that happened on the other trips could not have caused that severe reaction. So she believes that Epstein was doing something else. In addition to the unauthorized medical procedure, he could have very much been doing some sort of MK Ultra type mind control on the girls. Now, remember, Epstein worked for the CIA. the CIA performed all these procedures under the MKUltra banner. I think there were around 150 different sub-projects. And Juliet actually pointed me in that direction. So before she was well enough to speak about her experiences with Epstein, I did a lot of research into the real possibility that he could have been performing some type of MKUltra mind control experiments on the girls.
So for viewers who are not familiar with MKUltra, then, what is your understanding of MKUltra?
My understanding, well, if you look at, if your viewers want to do their own research, they can go to CIA.gov and they can have a look at all the different sub-projects and the awful experiments and procedures that the CIA performed on unwitting American population. They also apparently used vast quantities of LSD. So this spread through universities, prisons, research centers, etc. And they did all different types of experiments, like electric shock therapy. Apparently one woman who went in saying she suffered from depression, they used so much electric shock therapy that she couldn't recognize her own family when they came to visit her. And they were basically trying to work out what they could do with the mind. There was one procedure that actually stood out in my mind because it used two 19-year-old girls. And they were able to program them to detonate a simulated bomb through a code word over the telephone. And what's interesting, yes, I believe that young girls could be more programmable than other demographics. And I believe that when Juliet returned to Cape Town, she made the point of saying Epstein used to call her every few days. Now, it could be that he was reinforcing any type of programming that had been instilled in her. When you look at the Epstein scandal, what is interesting is that the girls were going back. So Juliet did three separate trips with Epstein, and then he would send her back to Cape Town and to her family. And a lot of people do not understand why she got back on a plane and went back to Epstein. I do devote an entire chapter in Blue Butterfly to that, which shows how he controlled the girls with empty promises, with threats. And she also said he was the sort of man you could not say no to. She believes that now she would have reacted in a very different way. But back then she felt she had to comply, basically. She had to go back and do what he wanted. And this could be partly due to some type of mind control procedure. He really manipulated and controlled these girls. Journalist Vicky Ward, who interviewed Epstein in 2002 and eventually produced a profile of him for Vanity Fair in 2003, said he was so manipulative. It was hard to understand how manipulative he was unless you were there. Obviously, journalist Vicky Ward picked up on the Farmer sisters' allegations, Maria and Annie Farmer's allegations, and she was not able to include them in her Vanity Fair profile. So she was profiling Epstein at the exact time that Juliet was being trafficked. And Juliet could notice how Epstein became increasingly irritable and uncomfortable because he knew that these allegations had come forward. To Juliet, he said, "These women have it in for me. They've made up these lies about me, etc." But those allegations were eventually axed from Vicky Ward's profile, called the Talented Mr. Epstein. And I think the reason why is Epstein intimidated the then editor, Graydon Carter. There was a severed cat's head found in a garden and a bullet on a doorstep. And I think even Epstein's close associate, Bill Clinton, paid him a visit. And therefore, those allegations were cut out of that 2003 Vanity Fair profile. And if it had gone forward, perhaps, you know, other girls would not have been targeted.
You've done some great research, Sarah. This is absolutely fascinating. So do you think when Jeffrey was transporting these girls, the girls he looked for, he picked them because they had certain characteristics that he could manipulate, brainwash, MK Ultra? And would you say that, you know, when Juliet fell into this web, there was a period where Jeffrey was analyzing her psychology to, you know, see what he could take advantage of?
Yes. Well, you probably know the story of how Juliet was recruited in Cape Town. So on the
let's repeat that then for the viewers.
Sure, I'll just go briefly over that. On the 26th of September 2002, Epstein flew into Cape Town with a high-profile entourage that included Bill Clinton, Kevin Spacey, and Chris Tucker. That night, Juliet was out having a couple of drinks with some friends in a bar, and she was approached by a very tall, stunning American model who said, "I'm here with the King of America. There's a billionaire. He's connected to Victoria's Secret, and he can launch your modeling career internationally. Would you like to meet him?" So Juliet went along with another model friend of hers and this girl to go and meet Epstein that very same evening. They were dining at a restaurant called Beluga. When the girls walked in, they were all mid-meal, but they made a point of standing up and shaking their hands. She said when she met Bill Clinton, he held onto her hand for a long time while he was talking to another person at the table, and that made her feel uncomfortable. But they only met for about 10 minutes at that stage, and she was invited to go back to the Cape Grace Hotel where they were staying with her modeling portfolio the next day. And Epstein seemed interested in her. He wanted to see her modeling portfolio. Before he viewed that, she was invited to go and see Bill Clinton say his speech. He was traveling, talking about HIV/AIDS and improving economic development on the continent. She said the speech was pretty cookie cutter. She wasn't that interested in that. She was rather watching Kevin Spacey, what he was doing. When they got back to the hotel, Epstein had gone so far as to set up a fake casting for her. There were three girls that were working for Epstein that Juliet later identified that were sitting in the presidential suite pretending to be Karen model agents. They all looked at her book and made comments on her pictures. While she was sitting there, Bill Clinton walked through the living area and acknowledged them, which also gave Epstein a lot of creditworthiness. When they looked at her book, they then sent her through to a separate room where she met with Epstein. And it was at that stage that Epstein started asking her questions. And in hindsight, the questions were definitely profiling her. What was the relationship like with her father? What was her financial situation like? Did she have any sisters? And did she have a boyfriend? So Juliet just thought that he was being friendly and nice, etc. But in retrospect, he was profiling her to find out whether she would be ideal to take over to the States. It took only about 2 weeks for him to get her a model visa. And about 3 weeks later, she was in the United States. She had been taken to New York.
So what you're saying then, Sarah, is there wasn't like a period of Jeffrey getting to know Juliet and trying to find out how he could take advantage of her. From the get-go, he had her screened.
Yes.
To find vulnerabilities.
Exactly.
That's like, you know, so calculating.
Yeah. Yeah. I've spoken to other Epstein survivors. For some reason, Sean, I have three close friends who were all on those flight logs. And I've spoken to five different survivors in total. Some of them were groomed for a long time. They have different experiences. So because Epstein was only in Cape Town for that one evening and he had a short time to profile Juliet, he didn't groom her. Another survivor I've spoken to was groomed, you know, taken out and bought presents and you know, he was really lovely to her. Juliet never had that, because when she arrived in New York, she was picked up by a town car with a driver. She was taken to the block, which is 301 East 66th Street, the block that was central to his transportation operations, and put in her own apartment there. She wasn't there for very long when the phone rang, and it was either Sarah Kellen or Leslie Groff, his two co-conspirators. One of the girls called to say, "We are going to the Caribbean, pack a bag for the Caribbean." And she wasn't prepared for that. She thought she was just going to be staying in New York modeling. So she had to pack what she had to go to the Caribbean, shower quickly. And the same town car came to pick her up and take her to Teterboro Airport, and apparently drove straight onto the runway to this private jet. And she didn't know what had been, you know, what was happening. She'd been traveling for 24 hours at that time. She was so excited she couldn't sleep on the plane. She had never left South Africa before. It was her first time traveling internationally on her own. She was exhausted. She entered the private jet, and Epstein was sitting there looking, watching her, and he patted the seat next to her. And she was strapped in for 3 hours on that flight to the island, and that's when the abuse started immediately.
Wow. All right. We've got almost 1,000 watching live, and I'm here with Sarah McCarthy. I'm going to put Sarah's book link in the live chat if you want to get that for pre-order. I mean, Sarah is meticulous at telling this story. Absolutely fascinating. But there's a hell of a lot more detail in the book, as you can imagine. We've only got an hour today. I'm going to try and get Sarah back when the book is actually released. So, you know, a lot has been said about Prince Andrew and Jeffrey. And we've actually got Andrew Loney coming back on at 7:30 p.m. UK tonight, live with Lauren viewers, so tune in for that one. And not much has been said about Bill Clinton and Jeffrey. It's almost as if, like, they've used Prince Andrew to keep the heat off Bill Clinton. Mm. But what it sounds to me from you, from what you're saying, is that, you know, there was a guy in this country called Jimmy Savile who I wrote a book about, and he did a lot for charity. He flew all over the world, had a papal knighthood. The Queen knighted him.
I mentioned him in my book.
He used good deeds and raising money for hospitals in particular here. He raised tens of millions. He used it as a cloak to get away with his evil deeds. And what it sounds to me, you know, Jeffrey's flying around the world with Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton's able to say, "Oh, I was in Africa, you know, helping the poor people of Africa," whatever he's doing. But behind the scenes, that is perhaps a disguise.
Yes.
For what? For the other, the transportation of the girls and the other evil deeds that are going on. Would you say, I guess we can only allege it because Bill Clinton doesn't have a conviction. Would you allege then that Bill Clinton was either participating in the evil deeds or was aware of the evil deeds?
Yes, I would think that he was. Although Virginia Giuffre, bless her soul, was trafficked to a lot of different men. She was never trafficked to Bill Clinton. It's very clear that Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Clinton were inextricably linked. I've drawn some parallels that other people have not, other journalists have not picked up. I can speak to that if you want, Sean.
Oh, yes, please. Let's say transported as well.
Right. So actually where I am at the moment in Charleston, I wrote a chapter called Obeah, which means a bad omen in local dialect in the US Virgin Islands. So I wrote about Jeffrey Epstein's private island. What no one else has picked up is that Bill Clinton decided to have his winter holiday in both January 1997 and January 1998 on the island of St. Thomas in the US Virgin Islands. 4 months later, in April 1998, Epstein then purchased his private island and called it Little St. James. Now, there must be some type of connection there. Why would he suddenly buy the island when his good friend Bill Clinton was holidaying there? You know, a lot of the press has sort of downplayed the association between Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Clinton, but there's a photograph of the two of them in the White House in 1993. And White House visitor logs uncovered by the Daily Mail show that Epstein visited the West Wing in particular 17 times after Bill Clinton was inaugurated. Another thing that I've picked up, which no one else has commented on, is that 3 days before leaving the White House, Bill Clinton assigned a monument designation in the US Virgin Islands off an island called St. John, which meant that the subterranean lands there would not be able to be used by fishermen. They would be protected. And was he really interested in conservation, or was there a deeper, darker reason for this monument designation? My American correspondent said that a lot of presidents tend to do this just before leaving the White House so that they don't get questioned over their decisions. So these are a lot of parallels that beg deeper questions.
And, you know, what we find out, what's documented, is usually only the tip of the iceberg, because when we interviewed Paul Page, Prince Andrew's Royal Protection Officer, he said Prince Andrew was bringing Maxwell into the palace off the books and had special access. And isn't there a theory that Maxwell and Epstein had special access to the White House through a back door or something? And, you know, perhaps there could have been much more going on.
I think to the White House, yes, they were visiting the White House. I think Epstein's visits in particular, he was met by Mark Middleton. Mark Middleton, as I'm sure you know, Sean, met a very untimely death. He was suicided in Arkansas. I think he was found hanging by an electrical cord from a tree, which draws parallels with Epstein's own death. He also had a shotgun blast in his chest, and the shotgun was thrown off the top of my head 30 yards away from him. But still, it was ruled a suicide. And this is the man that showed Epstein into the White House to visit with Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton's schedule showed that he was not always there at that time. What they were discussing is unsure, but I think Whitney Webb said it could have been to do with moving the CIA-linked airline, Southern Air Transport, to Ohio Rickenbacker Airport at that time. It could be why he was there.
Yeah, and if the people are not familiar, Southern Air Transport was one of the CIA airlines that transported the white kilos of the white stuff into America, and then the weapons down into South America.
Well, what's interesting around that specifically is that Juliet believes that Epstein could have been involved in some form of smuggling. So when you look at his Boeing 727, it had a rear hatch that opened mid-flight, so things could be dropped out of, you know, if they flew really low, they could drop something out. That is draws parallels with those planes. I think they were nicknamed, those cargo planes were retrofitted with rear hatches to drop the white powder, as you said, out. So there are parallels there. Epstein was moving every 3 days. I think a 2002, one of the first profiles ever written about Epstein was Thomas Landon Jr. wrote a profile for New York Magazine. And in that, he said that his planes were logging about 600 hours a year. And Epstein was moving every 3 days. So why was he moving that much? Juliet said he used to say he wanted to chase the sun, but the venues that he lived in, so specifically West Palm Beach and the Caribbean, the sun was pretty much always shining. So why was he moving around so much? What was he doing? I actually uncovered another article written by Vicky Ward, and that one was for Rolling Stone, where she alluded to the fact that he could have been smuggling. He also told another journalist, Edward J. Epstein, no relation, that he knew the owner of a deep water port in Djibouti so well that he practically ran it. When you look at Djibouti, about 30% of all the ships go through the Suez Canal. So it's a key sort of operational or smuggling route. And Jeffrey Epstein also told people that he was making a fortune out of guns and diamonds, moving them. So he could have been moving them as well. Juliet makes a very valid point. When you're that rich, why would you travel that much? It's time consuming. It's expensive. It's boring. So why was he traveling that much all the time?
Which confirms what Ari Ben Bernanke told us about Jeffrey being part of the Robert Maxwell spy weapons transportation network, Iran-Contra, etc. All ties completely into this.
Yes.
So have you looked at the flight logs with Bill Clinton and seen the names of the other passengers?
So Bill Clinton was on the flight logs, from what I understand, 26 times. He took four tours with Epstein. Two were to Africa. One was the 2002 tour where Juliet was recruited. Another one was to Asia and another one to Europe. He went to far-flung places such as Russia, Bangkok, with Epstein. So a lot of people are pointing fingers at Trump, but Trump traveled from what I understand, just from West Palm Beach to New York, where he had properties. He didn't do the same tours that Bill Clinton did. Bill Clinton traveled with eight Secret Service personnel once, and that was on the 13th of July 2002, off the top of my head. In that instance, this also ties into the smuggling. I uncovered another link between an unusual event in Morocco where Moroccan forces took over a small island, just basically a rock, in the Straits of Gibraltar. It's about 200 meters off the coastal beaches of Tangier. So I think this happened on the Thursday, the 11th of July, 2002. Moroccan forces invaded this island, which was actually owned by Spain. So therefore, it was the first invasion on Western soil, NATO soil, since World War II, and it provoked Spain. But at the same time, these Moroccan forces took over this tiny island, which had no economic value. It was just basically a rock. King Mohammed was celebrating his nuptials with a three-day affair in the capital, Rabat. And Clinton and his eight Secret Service men, as well as Doug Band, his right-hand man, were at those nuptials. Now, what is happening on this island, and why did Jeffrey Epstein then fly in from Nice, France, on the 13th of July, while this rock was under Moroccan siege, and pick up Bill Clinton in... So Jeffrey Epstein first flew into Tangier, right where this was happening, and then into Rabat and picked up Clinton before flying him back to the States via the Portuguese archipelago of the Azores. I find it all rather fascinating because the press haven't picked up on this either. And that island, the only strategic value it could have is that it sits in the Straits of Gibraltar, which is a key smuggling route between North Africa and Europe. So this is just another thing that I've picked up and written in Blue Butterfly.
Why do you think the mainstream media hasn't reported much on Bill Clinton and Epstein?
You know, Juliet was she was interviewed for The House of Maxwell, which is a BBC documentary, when she said that she met Bill Clinton and Epstein at the same time. Bill Clinton's name was axed out of that. Yeah. Out of their interview. When she asked the producers of the show, why did you take Bill Clinton's name out? They said it detracted from the emotional impact of his story. So I suppose that he is being protected.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
In your research, did you only find that it was Bill Clinton visiting Jeffrey, or did Hillary ever attend?
I have no proof of Hillary attending, no. Just Bill. I didn't see her name on the flight logs.
What other big names came up through your research?
Well, on the final trip to New Mexico, Juliet was taken, along with another survivor, to meet with the then governor of New Mexico, Bill Richardson. His name also came up with Virginia Giuffre because she claimed that she was trafficked to him. Juliet said on this particular instance, when she was in New Mexico, three strange things happened. Firstly, Jeffrey Epstein did not abuse her on that trip, sexually abuse her. And for a man with his rapacious appetite, that was very unusual. Secondly, he took her into a room and he gave her what she described as a pelvic exam. He examined her in an almost medical way. Then he took her on this strange outing to, she believes it was the governor's mansion, where she met up with Bill Richardson, and she described somebody who would have been his right-hand man. Through my research, the name that comes up is David Coltrano, but I cannot be sure. They were told to sit outside. The men came out and met her and another survivor, looked at them for about 5 minutes. She didn't understand why they were there or why they were appraising them. Then Epstein went back into the office, had about a 5 minute or 10 minute conversation meeting with these men, came out and took them home. So Juliet is saying, why were we there? That is the same trip that she had this awful experience waking up in a lab, which she can describe to this day with great detail. There was a female doctor with long dark hair tied back in a ponytail. She had flawless skin. When Juliet woke up, this female doctor noticed she had gained consciousness and reassured her, said everything's going to be okay. She moved back down towards Juliet's abdomen. Juliet said she could feel the pressure of her touch. She was doing something down there. But she couldn't feel any pain. She was paralyzed. So she was obviously under some form of anesthesia. Afterwards, Juliet had a scar, a small circular scar, 2 inches above her pubic bone. And after that trip to New Mexico, it was slightly red and inflamed. So Juliet believes that her eggs were being harvested. And this sort of segues into Jeffrey Epstein's eugenics plans quite well, Sean. So if you'd like me to keep going, I can.
Yes, yes, please. We tell our guests never cut a long story short. We love long answers, longer the better, more detail.
Okay. So around the time that Jeffrey Epstein was transporting Juliet, he was announcing his eugenics plans to the world. He spoke to several scientists as well as a financial advisor about his plans to seed the human race with his DNA. Specifically, he wanted to impregnate up to 20 women at a time at Zorro Ranch. Exactly. And this was reported by the New Times in 2011. So one of the scientists he spoke to, I'm trying to remember his name now. It'll come to me, Roger Shank. He said to Roger Shank, if I only contribute my sperm and my money, will my progeny turn out like me? And Roger Shank remembers this conversation, and he advised Jeffrey Epstein to stop, to safeguard his genetic investment by preventing the woman that he impregnated from forming relationships with other men. There was another scientist that also spoke to Epstein's genetics plans, virtual reality pioneer Jaron Lennon. Oh, his name will always, I'm terrible with names. His name will come to me. He had dinner at Jeffrey Epstein's New York mansion. And at that dinner, he noticed that there were a lot of attractive, highly accomplished women. He spoke to one lady who apparently worked for NASA, and she they spoke about Epstein's eugenics plans and impregnating women at Saro Ranch. And he then told the New York Times that he was left with the lasting impression that Epstein was using this event to screen certain women to be potential candidates to act, you know, to be childbearing vessels for his eugenics program. The Guardian also said that Epstein was supposedly inspired by Robert Craig Graham, who is a businessman and eugenicist, who started the Repository for Germinal Choice. In about 1980, Graham announced his plans to the world to create a sperm bank stocked mainly with Nobel laureate sperm. Yes, according to Slate, he only managed to a handful to contribute their sperm, maybe 3 to 5 Nobel laureates, depending on who they spoke to. But he very much shielded this project from public scrutiny because he housed it in an underground bunker in the backyard of his ranch in San Diego, California. Now, this has deep parallels with Epstein's eugenics program, because we believe that, I believe that there were underground facilities. When I say we, Juliet and I believe that there were underground facilities at Saro Ranch where this event, where her flashback took place. So going back to the repository, Robert K. Graham was a eugenicist. His plan was very controversial. The repository was very controversial. There was an LA Times journalist that uncovered that one of the donors, William Shockley, was a known eugenicist and racist, had actually contributed his sperm. The BBC also uncovered that the parents of the first baby born had previously been charged for child abuse. Despite this, 217 babies were born to this repository, and it eventually closed down after about 2 decades in 1999. Reports say that the sperm was incinerated, but I looked at Epstein's actions around that time, and that's exactly when he was expanding Saro Ranch and expanding the facilities at Saro Ranch. So I believe that this project could have just been moved across to Saro Ranch, because this is the time he started talking about his plans to seed the human race with his DNA. But who's to say he wasn't getting scientists on board to contribute? You know, he formed many, he was sponsoring scientists, he was courting them. So he could have succeeded where Graham failed.
Good grief, I think we're all getting chills, Sarah. I mean, we've been interviewing people about Epstein for, 5-6 years now? And you have certainly unearthed some of the more macabre details that we've never heard before. So, you know, we salute you for that, because we've got to shine a light on this to expose it, to prevent it from happening again. Some of the people we've interviewed, we've learned that, I think it was Audra, was offered increasing sums of money for her eggs. I can imagine there's a lot of people who were offered money that we don't know about, and perhaps some of them may have taken the money, which begs the question, do you think there are Epstein offspring out there?
I would think that there would be, yes, Sean. But just to go back to what you just said, did you say that a survivor was offered money for her eggs?
Yes.
Wow. I knew I'd get some information from you. So Juliet also points to the fact that in 2014, Epstein set up a butterfly trust. In this trust, there were a lot of payments made to a lot of women with Eastern European names, and we don't know what those payments were for. And when I looked at it, I thought he was paying women for their eggs as part of his eugenics program. With Juliet, I think they just took them without offering her any payment.
We did a podcast called Epstein's Baby Farm Exposed by survivor Audra Lynn. And we were trying to get Audra to do a collaboration with Juliet. We're still working on that. But what I'll do is I'll email that to you.
Please.
And for the viewers, I will put this. If you go in the description box, you've got the link to our podcast with Juliet. I'll also put the link to this podcast in there as well now. So, I mean, it's terrifying, this stuff.
Yes.
And, yeah.
You know, the press have actually labeled Zorro Ranch as the baby-making ranch. And the other thing that's terrifying, Sean, is that it's the only property that the FBI have not raided. And why have they not done that? You know, Maria Farmer, who worked and then was abused by Epstein in 1996, she came out and said that all of Epstein's properties have underground rooms or tunnel systems, and she knows this because he told her so. She also remembers seeing huge rooms full of computers below Zorro Ranch and his other properties. She even made a comment to say why anyone would need so many computers in one room is beyond her. So what was he using those for? You know, he was also into DNA profiling. He was definitely into something that was more medical than anyone the press have touched on before.
Well, you know, in Virginia's story, she said that when she was in Thailand, they sent her papers to try and get her to sign over a baby to Maxwell and Jeffrey.
That's interesting. I don't know if it happened necessarily like that. I think she escaped to Thailand. So she spoke to the Miami Herald, and she said after a lovely day of snorkeling on the island, the three of them, they approached her and asked her if they would surrogate a child for her. And when specifically Maxwell started talking, she said, oh, it would be your baby, but it would actually be our baby, and we can do anything we want with our baby. And this idea left Virginia panicked. So even though they had offered her a house, and I think it was $200,000 a year in exchange for the baby, she decided enough was enough, and she decided to escape. So she said to Epstein, please, before I get pregnant, I'd like to go and do my massage training in Thailand. So Epstein acquiesced. He said, yes, you can go, on condition that you bring back a Thai girl for me. And Virginia just went, yes, yes, yes. Pretty much what Juliet used to do. She used to just say yes, but not follow through. So she was able to escape to Thailand, where she met Robert, and I think they were married 3 days later. But what is interesting is the timeline, Sean, because Virginia's last flight, I think, was around, it was August 2002, just before Epstein recruited Juliet in September 2002. So if he had just asked one survivor to be a surrogate for his child, do you think he would give up on those plans so easily? This was not a man that you said no to. So now he's got Juliet. Do you think he was going to ask her? No, she would probably just escape. So he possibly just took her eggs.
Yeah, so many people have wondered why all these scientists were visiting Jeffrey. And Jeffrey splurged a lot of money, didn't he, on certain academic institutions. Wasn't MIT one of them?
MIT and Harvard. His biggest splurge was Program for Evolutionary Dynamics, PED, in Harvard, which he contributed $6.5 million. And that was run by Martin Novak. And Martin Novak famously said, with Epstein's support, I feel like I can do anything. So what that meant, I don't know. His area of expertise was quite broad, viruses, et cetera. So what exactly they were doing at this Program for Evolutionary Dynamics, I'm not sure. But Epstein got his own key card. They circumnavigated all of Harvard's protocols in order to get him his own key card, so that he could access the campus. He also was awarded a visiting fellow, and it was Dr. Stephen Coslin that supported this, another psychologist, neuroscientist, cognitive scientist. So what is interesting is that Epstein was very interested in how the brain worked. Going back to Harvard, I think a key year for him was 1998. He joined the Harvard Mind, Brain, and Behavior Committee and sat on the board there. This would have given him a front row seat to how the brain functioned. He also courted scientists that were specifically cognitive scientists, psychologists, neuroscientists. And he was very interested in how the brain worked because he constantly quizzed Juliet, who would give a little riddles to solve. And he would say to her, oh, your brain works differently to other people's brains, which is quite interesting. I also believe, Jeffrey Epstein was a teetotaler. He wouldn't allow the girls to drink any alcohol. I believe that this could have had something to do with the fact that he was tampering with their brains and the alcohol could have affected it. There's a lot of evidence in Blue Butterfly to suggest this. I also show how Juliet said she had a bottle of Fiji water next to her bed every single night, and that he could have put substances into that water. We don't know what he was doing with these girls, but if you look at the CIA and what they did have special substances, that mind-altering substances that could have put her under. So when she had this procedure in Sorrow's Ranch, she could have been drugged.
So what do you think Jeffrey was expecting in return from these scientists by giving them all this money?
Their complicity. I think that some of them were involved in these mind control procedures. And maybe they were funded, maybe he was just steering the direction of their research, controlling the scientific narrative. I'm not sure. He could have also been, he was a blackmailer. This we know because of all the cameras that he had in all his properties. He could have also blackmailed them. There's one scientist that I've just mentioned, that his name comes up, a Harvard professor, his name comes up in Virginia Giuffre's unpublished memoir or manuscript. So it was released as part of court documentation. And she said that she was sent to the island to meet up with a particular Harvard professor, and she had to give him a massage. So he could have been filmed, and that could have, that blackmail material could have given Epstein leverage over whatever he did, his research, or maybe got him to become involved in these mind control procedures on these girls.
So a few of the viewers have asked for your thoughts on Les Wexner's role in all of this. We certainly know about the infrastructure that Wexner controlled and how he signed his... What was it he signed over to Jeffrey? So Jeffrey had control of his finances.
Power of attorney.
Yeah.
Yes. So Leslie Wexner gave Epstein power of attorney. There were two investigators Thomas Falshaw and Boyd. I think he was a forensic accountant that looked into a tangled web of financial dealings around Epstein and Leslie Wexner. Basically, Wexner had given Epstein power of attorney. Then Epstein managed his trusts. They found a pattern in these finances, basically a large amount of stock from the limited would be liquidated. And when that was liquidated, Epstein would then make a large purchase, such as an aircraft or his island. And I believe that in this way, Leslie Wexner was funneling money to Epstein. Remember, there's also the New York mansion that belonged to Leslie Wexner. And Jeffrey Epstein famously got that for $0 or $1, depending on the report you're looking at. So basically, that was gifted to Epstein. Leslie Wexner did a full gut renovation, but never lived in the home. Epstein was the first person to live there, but the property was only transferred to him much later in 2011 into a company that he owned called Maple Inc., based in the US Virgin Islands. So it was all very shady and opaque, like all Epstein's businesses that he based in the US Virgin Islands. They were opaque. They didn't have the proper financial statements.
Yeah, and we've looked at Wexner's finances over the years, and they split the company up, didn't they? So there's Victoria's Secret and there's Bed Bath & Beyond, I think it is. But then Wexner moved into AI through CoreWeave. So CoreWeave, he's made billions off this now. CoreWeave today has announced an AI deal with Meta, a $14 billion wow. AI deal with Meta. The stock market price is up 13% today, an all-time high, which has probably added even more to Wexner's billions. So how come Wexner gets to ride off into the sunset on all this?
Well, I think it was Whitney Webb who said the fact that he hasn't been subpoenaed or questioned over his ties to Jeffrey Epstein, she used the word bonkers, and I quite agree with her.
Yeah, very absolutely. English word, bonkers.
Yeah, but, you know, a lot of people probably don't know that Epstein was also involved in AI as far back as 2002 when he first started transporting Juliet. I think it was April 2002, he hosted a symposium on St. Thomas, the island neighboring to his private island, Little St. James. And that was organized by Marvin Minsky. And at that AI symposium, they sought to produce a machine with human-like common sense. Yes. He also hosted other symposia on St. Thomas and on Little St. James. There was another 2006 conference on St. Thomas, which was called Confronting Gravity. That's the one that Stephen Hawking ended up at. So while the symposium was actually on St. Thomas, he also invited them over to a barbecue on Little St. James. And that's the time when Stephen Hawking was on the island. What was interesting is that he modified a submarine so that Stephen Hawking's wheelchair could fit on that submarine so he could explore the floors around Little St. James. And what a lot of people don't know is that Ghislaine Maxwell, in addition to having a pilot's license to fly a helicopter, also had a license to operate a submersible or submarine. So now she's got a license to operate a submarine. Epstein had access to them and the funds to modify them. And then you hear all about what's happening underneath that island, and it paints a very troubling picture.
You got a few people asking about Kevin Spacey and Chris Tucker. You mentioned them earlier on the flight with Bill Clinton. Do you think that they had knowledge or were involved?
Well, Kevin Spacey has his own demons, doesn't he? I didn't find anything on Chris Tucker. Kevin Spacey, Juliet pointed this out to me. She said three of his accusers all died in 1 year. The one was not an accuser. It was a female. She was a nurse, Linda Culkin. She apparently stalked Kevin Spacey in around 2014. She was forced to pay damages because she bombarded him with death threats and bomb scares. So she had to pay an amount to cover his bodyguards. She did admit that she suffered from mental health issues, but in February 2019, she was hit by a car, and while crossing a road in a busy intersection, and there's no foul play suspected, but it was fatal. 2 days later, she died in hospital. So that car had to be going quite fast. That same year, another of Kevin Spacey's accusers, I think it was John Doe, a massage therapist who went to his Malibu home. He alleged that Kevin Spacey tried to kiss him, tried to get him to touch his genitals, and blocked his exit during a massage. He died and reportedly from cancer in September 2019, and the case against Spacey was dropped soon after. But the most creepy part of the whole story is that Kevin Spacey used to post these Christmas messages, and you may have seen it, Sean, at the 2019 Christmas message. He was wearing a Christmas jersey. He was poking a fire with a red hot poker, and he was saying, the next time somebody does something that you don't like, you could go on the attack, or you could kill them with kindness. And then this ominous music plays, and the title of that Christmas video was Kill Them With Kindness. And it would have been less creepy if another accuser of his had not committed suicide the next day on Christmas Day. And that was Norwegian man by the name of Ari Ben, who was married to the Norwegian princess. I think her name was Martha Louise. Admittedly, he was suffering from some mental health issues after she had left to form a new relationship with a self-styled shaman who was linked to Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop, wellness brand Goop. But he committed suicide on Christmas Day the next day. And I think it was in about 2017, he had alleged that Spacey had grabbed his genitals at a Nobel Prize concert a decade earlier. So that was the third accuser of Kevin Spacey's to die in the same year.
I can see why they chose him to play Frank Underwood now. So we're almost at the hour. There's a few questions coming for you. Are you okay to answer those?
Yes, we can go for as long as you want, Sean.
So Elizabeth wants to know, talk about the toddler victims, allegations young girls were impregnated on the ranch. Why? So why was he doing this baby farm stuff? Was that his legacy, or didn't he have a theory of immortality as well?
Well, I think all of these elites were obsessed with immortality because Epstein was into transhumanism. And in 2011, he actually donated $20,000 to the World Transhumanist Association, which later sanitized its name to Humanity Plus. That same year, he also donated $100,000 to Ben Goetzel, its vice chairman. This was not the first time that Epstein sponsored Goetzel's work. In 2001, he also gave $100,000 to Goetzel, which was listed on his resume, to support his work. At that time in 2001, Goetzel took on an associate research professor role at the University of Albuquerque in New Mexico surrounding AI. Now, that university is exactly 1 hour away from Zorro Ranch. So it would be likely that he would have visited his benefactor's ranch, which was an hour away from where he took this associate professor role. Transhumanism obviously is transcending the biological limits of the human brain and mind, and it borders on the narcissistic. It's pushing humanity towards being subhuman. And it has, you know, obviously this immortality ideology around it. Talking about toddlers, I can't say I know any evidence of toddlers being involved. But when you look at what I touched on earlier with the submarines, with the submersible license, and with the possibility of there being underground tunnels on Epstein's Island, there was some very damning evidence that Epstein transported tons of cement and a karmic cement mixer to his island just before his arrest. So why did he need all the cement and a cement mixer? Was it to obfuscate his most damning crimes, which could have taken place underground? There were also, when the FBI raided Little St. James, a YouTuber, or I think his name was Rusty Shackelford, which is obviously a pseudonym, took drone footage of the island. And that drone footage clearly showed buildings that had doors in the back of them that opened up into the cliff face. The temple had a path that went down to another entryway that opened into the island. There were also ventilation shafts and other infrastructure that, when you look at it, it looks like it is serving something underneath the island. So what was happening down there, I don't know, but I don't have any evidence of toddlers.
All right, folks, this is your final chance to get some questions in for Sarah. And we are talking about Epstein's cloning, baby farming, eugenics. We've got almost 2,000 watching live. And here's the link. I'll put it in the live chat again. If you want to pre-order Sarah's book with Juliet's story in it, you can get it through that link. And if you're watching this on replay, it is in the description box. So an interesting comment is coming here. I wonder if you can expand on this. I see a connection between the immortality theory and the occult buildings, symbology, and details I've seen in his house and on his property.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Yes, he did have some symbology, I think specifically on the, I didn't go into the symbology specifically around the temple that much. The reason being, this is Juliet's story. I zoned in on the years 2002 to 2004 while she was being transported. And that building was built at a later stage, so she never saw it. But there were two owls perched on top of that building, which could be Moloch. I haven't gone into that in great detail, so this is not my area of expertise. But he did have other symbols in his house, also in his New York mansion. I think he had Pan, a statue of Pan, which is half man, half goat, which is a occultist, occultist symbol. What was interesting is Juliet noticed these freaky eyeballs in this entryway. He had framed eyeballs, and she was freaked out enough to ask Epstein about them. He said that they were from the war, so she assumes that they were taken from dead soldiers from the war. This links back to Jimmy Savile, and this is another connection that I've made that nobody else has made. Jimmy Savile was also fascinated with glass eyeballs. He had access to the Leeds mortuary, and he said that he got his glass eyeballs from the mortuary, and he fashioned them into necklaces and rings and wore them. There's photographic evidence of that. So why do two pedophiles on either side of the Atlantic have a fixation with glass eyeballs? Is it an occult symbology? I'm not sure, but maybe somebody smarter than me will be able to draw those parallels.
Yeah, that is interesting as to why both of them. What came to my mind with Saville, when Saville was considered a miracle baby because he had an accident when he was a kid and his eyes wouldn't close for like a couple of years. And I think they thought he was gonna die. And when he survived, then he got all this special treatment from his family, and it made him, it must have, played into his ego and his narcissism, etc. So Bob wants to know, is there any information on Richard Branson on his island?
Well, it's interesting that all these elites in Epstein's circle tend to have islands specifically in that area. Richard Branson, yes, I do speak about him in the book because I tie him into the Nixium cult, and I have a whole chapter on that. The Nixium cult is tied into Juliet's story because it was sponsored by Claire Bronfman of the Seagrams. She's a Seagrams heiress. Epstein was connected to the Bronfman family, Edgar Bronfman Sr. He was advising him, I think, on tax when he was at Bear Stearns. Seagrams was a Bear Stearns client. They were also involved in real estate deals together through Comet Trust. Claire Bronfman then bought Fiji Water on the Isle of Wakanda, off the top of my head. So there was this connection there with Epstein, the Bronfmans, Fiji Water, and Nixium, because Claire Bronfman funded Keith Raniere, who started the Nixium cult. In my book, I draw parallels between this cult, how they used food as a tool of manipulation and control, which Epstein did. They psychologically manipulated these girls. I think there was also some type of mind control going on within Nixium. So there are good parallels to Epstein's operations. And how Richard Branson is involved in this is that he hosted a Nixium event on his island, or should I say, the Bronfmans booked Necker Island for a Nixium event. And he later said, "I wasn't aware of Nixium. I thought it was just the Bronfmans who were booking the island." There's also that famous photograph of Branson with a naked girl clutching onto his back while he is kiteboarding. Interestingly enough, now that is a South African model. I think her name is Denny, and Juliet knows her. So it's also interesting how a lot of South African girls are being sucked into these operations.
One of the viewers just said that she loves the book cover. And Nikki has pointed out that Peter Nygaard also had an island. We know what he got up to. Is there certain laws on these islands that don't apply? Can they get away with more on the islands? Is that why they bring people to the island instead of doing it on the mainland?
Well, I'm sure they are, shielded from the public scrutiny, absolutely. But to touch on Peter Nygaard, he had the same aeroplane as Epstein, the 727, with the rear hatch that opened mid-flight. He was also linked, Prince Andrew was photographed with Epstein in Central Park. He was also photographed with Peter Nygaard on his, Nygaard K in the Bahamas. And Peter Nygaard is also facing transporting charges. And I think he made Epstein look like a choir boy. He was also into his own strange longevity program. So his shtick was he would want to impregnate local Caribbean or woman, then get them to abort their fetuses, and then he would take the stem cells from those fetuses and use them in his own program to remain young.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yes.
Thank God he's behind bars.
Yeah.
John Jacob wants to know whether you heard of Lex Wexner's underground facilities.
No, it would be quite lightly because he has that huge compound in Ohio, New Albany, Ohio. So you would think, especially with all this money that he has, that he would have some underground facilities.
Oh, he's got so much infrastructure, Wexner. He's probably got all kinds going on that we'll never find out about. And don't forget his links to the CIA. He moved a CIA airline to Ohio with Epstein. So you can only imagine what this guy's got access to. All right, so Tyrell, do the Bidens own the island that's next door to Epstein's, Water Island? Are you anything about on that?
They own a plot on Water Island, yes, which has direct line of sight, I believe, to Little St. James Island.
Veronica wants to know your thoughts on Virginia's husband, the maltreatment, the, you know, what happened, and whether he could have been a handler of some kind.
The thought crossed my mind. I've just watched something recently on that, a documentary around Virginia. And it was interesting because they met and were married within 3 days. I watched an interview and he does look like he's in love with her, but the thought did cross my mind that he could have been a handler. Yeah.
Okay. And Maxwell's, you know, she was selling virtual lots from the ocean, Terramar. Have you looked at Terramar?
I have looked at Terramar. I've looked at everything, Sean. I've been researching for 5 years. So there's, yes. So Terramar, what's interesting around that is that Richard Branson supported Terramar. He actually tweeted, oh, let's take care of the oceans, et cetera, support Ghislaine Maxwell's Terramar, become a citizen of Terramar. That's what he said. And that's quite interesting because when Ghislaine Maxwell was charged, they asked her, are you a citizen of the United Kingdom? She said, yes. France, yes. United States, yes. Then they asked her, are you a citizen of anywhere else? And she said, yes, of Terramar. And yes. So this is subterranean land that they're wanting to control, and linking that back to what I've said previously about her having a submersible license. It's all rather terrifying.
All right, so next question then. Did Epstein help the Clintons set up the Clinton Foundation?
Oh, that's a very interesting question, because that's exactly what Juliet heard when she was being transported. She heard that Epstein set up Bill Clinton's foundation.
Okay. Are there any other big names on the flight logs to keep an eye on?
On the flight logs, I'm not sure. So Juliet said that she wasn't privy to a lot of celebrities. I think Epstein had fewer parties that people actually think. He was quite reclusive in many ways. She said in the evenings that they would sit and watch movies together. However, she did meet movie producer Michael Bay when she was at Zorro Ranch. And what's interesting about that is that was in 2004. In 2005, Michael Bay produced the movie called The Island, which was all about human cloning. And in that movie, Ewan McGregor and Scarlett Johansson escape into a desert-like compound very similar to Zorro Ranch. So was he doing research? We don't know.
So the book that Barr wrote, the science fiction book, which describe people being transported and these evil acts perpetrated upon them, do you think that was some kind of blueprint that Jeffrey utilized from his job when he was a school teacher?
Well, it's interesting because he was hired, and most people think by Barr, who had ties to the OSS, the precursor to the CIA. And Barr wrote, I think it was Space Relations, an intergalactic tale, or can't remember the exact title, but it was about taking slaves, basically 16-year-old teenagers as slaves. I just think that the elites in this circle all are obsessed with slavery, that sort of thing. Jeffrey Epstein also had some books or receipts for books that were discovered in his trash when the Palm Beach police raided his mansion in, I think it was October 2005. They found receipts in his trash for two books that were very much BDSM type, slave type themed books, which showed that he was also into that sort of thing. And Virginia Giuffre speaks a little bit to that about some sort of BDSM type, with Rena O, I think it was. I don't know if I can really speak about that because I think she said it didn't take place.
So, right, we've gone into overtime here and you've answered all the questions. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion to the viewers?
I think I've only touched on a few things here, Sean. Blue Butterfly has got something for everyone. It's got, we haven't touched on my intelligence. We haven't touched on the psychological manipulation. There's a whole lot of things in there. I honestly believe that it would be a thoroughly exciting read for anybody, male, female, whatever age you are. And the book is available for pre-sale on trineday.com. So that's T-R-I-N-E. I think you have put the link in the description of the video. So thank you for that, Sean. And if there are any other questions, I'm happy to field them.
And what's the release date?
18th of November.
So we could potentially get you back on around then, could we?
I would love to come back on. That would be wonderful, Sean.
That would be wonderful. Thank you very much then, Sarah. You've been so generous with your time. I'm going to let you go now and close the show. So have a great rest of your day, Sarah. Thank you.
You too. Thank you so much, Sean.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye. Wow, folks, what an absolutely phenomenal guest. Just when we think we know everything about Epstein, we just get completely blown out the water with next level of detail. Dark but fascinating. It's good, you know, that Sarah is shining a light on this stuff. We've only had an hour. A book in audiobook terms is usually about 10 to 12 hours. So can you imagine the level of detail that she's gone into in the book? So the link's in the live chat. The link is in the description box if you want to pre-order. And if you're interested in more on this subject, we've got Andrew Loney coming in tonight. Fergie, what a scammer. She's been in the news here to do with Epstein and what was leaked, pretending that she was sorry for the survivors when actually she was just trying to pretend to save a book deal. So that's just one of the subjects that Andrew Loney is going to be covering at 7:30 p.m. UK. And Lauren is going to be coming on with him. And then at 6 p.m., we have got Ron coming on. He's doing a call-in show on Charlie Kirk. And that's what we've got for today. Let me see if we've got anything else coming up. We've got Kevin Annette coming on October the 5th. And we've got Annika coming on. Annika Lucas is coming on. She's going to be flying over and staying at my house. So we're going to be broadcasting live from here. That is October the 12th at 8 p.m. And we did mention in this video today, also in the description box, you can watch Juliet Bryant part one. We have just filmed Juliet and her mom. That will be part two coming soon. And we've also got the interview, the link with Epstein's baby farm exposed by survivor Audra Lynn down there as well. So if you want to watch more stuff related to what we've just spoken about, they would be the next two podcasts to go to. All right. Thank you for tuning in, folks. Thank you for your great questions. Thanks for supporting Sarah.